Thank you for tuning into Healing Rays. In this episode, our four guests, Marin, Susan, Landon, and Marcus, talk about how they view our racial history. Landon wonders how the other guests process the good, the bad, and the ugly of our history, particularly as it relates to race. Do we feel bitterness? Do we idealize our nation and its history? Or do we feel something in between or more nuanced?
Our guests also begin discussing how we should think about responsibility for the racial wrongs done in our nation's history. Does tolerance of a racial wrong, even when not committing that actual wrong, morally implicate someone in the wrong? Do our ancestors' racial wrongs implicate us now? Let's get to those conversations now. Enjoy.
I kind of mentioned what, you know, the idealized history looked like for a person in a typical conservative area, I would say. And I wanted to know, you know, how do you guys view United States history? You know, there's, you know, some people are really bitter about it. Some people just have this religious viewpoint that it's straight from God's hand. And then there's all the mess in between. And so how do you think about it, and where do you draw strength from your history, your story, and what values and character came out of it?
I can say one of the things that my family has done a good job of instilling in me, and I work very hard to continue instilling it, yes, I am the descendant of slaves, you know, completely like off the, like when we did our family, like history, like off the coast of Houston is where like my family's origins, my last name comes from. We were purchased by some German immigrants and worked there. And, you know, our history is very, very complex, where I would say I don't have a bitterness towards quote unquote the United States. I have more of a bitterness that entire stories of entire people are left out. And I say that not only for Black people, I think Indigenous people, I think Latino people. I mean, I pay attention to simple things like, you know, growing up in Texas, like the very little I learned about Latino history and even some of the animosity towards Latinos to this day when pretty much we went into Mexico. It baffles me that like there will be this negative reaction towards hearing people speak in Spanish. I'm like, technically, didn't we come like here? that sort of a thing. And I still can say, you know, outside of like a handful of Latinos, I didn't really learn a lot about like Mexican history growing up in Texas. I also am very wary when people talk about, particularly Black people, and the victimhood narrative and everything like that. And I say, no. I was like, well, we are descendants of slaves. We are not victims, we are victors. You know, if anything, I look back on the fact that, you know, 7-8 generations ago, my family was bought off the coast of Houston to be where we are today and to have survived Jim Crow. And my family, we have a lot of stories. I mean, my uncle accidentally drinking out of like a whites only fountain, and my great grandfather having to sit up with a shotgun waiting for the Klan. Like those sorts of stories to come to like where we are is one of unbelievable triumph, unbelievable pride, unbelievable faith. Faith is a big part, like my family. And so when there is kind of this narrative that seems to come from conservatives around like, don't teach that, you know, you're just feeding it to them being victims. Like, I feel it's actually, are you trying to rob us of a story that should give us unbelievable pride that literally we can overcome anything, you know, like if we're really taught about what it is that we overcame. So that's more of the view that I have. I mean, I guess I just fully understand that I don't know the full history of the United States because of still so much that I am learning about Black history alone. And I'm not even going to pretend to touch on Asian, Native American, like just all the different populations, the people who all have their own stories, you know, being here. I mean, Todd, last time I was in DC, I went to the US Holocaust Museum for the first time. I have my own opinion. I think some of that, I think they were getting some of that a little whitewashed and a little wrong, but like just this very patriotic, like we were the heroes of World War II. I was like, we knew that was going on for a long time. Stop it. But, you know, that, but still, it was my first time seeing certain images that I was like, you know what? There's a lot I just don't know. But I think we have to be okay with knowing that not everything is black and white, good and bad. I mean, even amongst, you know, amongst all of the populations that we all kind of come from and identities that we represent, no one is like the good guy and the bad guy. Like we all have just like these really complex, and we just, for some reason as a nation, we have a tough time with nuance. It's like George Washington, hero or villain, what do you think, right? You know, Martin Luther King, hero or villain, what do you think? And I'm like, I don't think it's that simple. Like, why are we like almost encouraging this simplistic thinking rather than really paying more attention to the nuance?
Yeah. That's really nice, Maren. Thank you. Yeah.
Who wants to go next?
I would just agree with Maren. I don't think I necessarily have a resentment or a problem with American history or the history of the United States. It's more so the disregard or the attempt to whitewash it and just act as if everything is fair and, oh yeah, the black people, they were slaves, but we're all good now. Like, it's the disregard for calling a spade a spade. And so that would be the problem that I have. I don't have a problem with the history of the country, just more so when you think of teaching the facts and diving into it and unpacking it, it's as if we don't want to go beyond being superficial. It's more so, no, it didn't happen that way. Let's not talk about that. That's in the past. We're good now. So,
and Marcus, what would that education look like to you, diving into the facts and diving into the nuance of it all? Like, what would you like to see?
I would like to see it go beyond a headline per se, go beyond Martin Luther King, go beyond Rosa Parks. Let's talk about what happened and just unpack it all and tell the truth and just be real about it. It's horrific. It's very horrific. It's a lot to unpack, but it is what it is. And if we don't want to repeat what has already transpired and happened, then let's talk about it all. That's the only way you're going to prevent it from reoccurring. So
it seems like there's a sense from the two of you, and before we move on to Susan and Landon, how they experience history, there's a sense that, just to relate it to Landon's story specifically, because Landon, you said you kind of got that superficial history is basically what I heard from you, and so you. It would seem that we would want everybody, you know, the Landons of the world, let's say, myself included, by the way, not just picking on Landon, but just to hear more of the complexity of the story, both the good, bad, and ugly, is kind of what you're saying. Am I hearing that right?
Yes.
But it sounds like, I don't know, how do you, Landon, was the answer you heard what you expected from Maren?
Yeah, I expected, you know, based upon, I think that a lot of people kind of, they have the 1776 view or the 1619 view now. And I think that those are poles. And Maren brought up all the ethnic groups and different peoples that have come to this country. And they have, you know, their own massive stories. You know, my wife is from Honduras. She moved here when she was 20. So she has her own story, her culture, you know, that has become part of me. And so, you know, it's hard to, for all of us to understand all of those stories, but each story is just complex. And the people, you know, each of us are, you know, this massive interactions of experiences and evolving interactions, you know. And so I, like has been mentioned, I think it's really easy to to bend people into poles, you know, and it's also easy to do that with history.
And you see those poles as being kind of like the U.S. history was horrible. We just need to feel horrible and guilty and upset about it all versus like our history is amazing. And like, we are the enlightened ones and we brought all that is wonderful to the world in terms of how to govern ourselves. Is that what you're saying with the 1776 versus the 1619?
Yeah. To some degree. I mean,
I'm exaggerating, but
yeah, right. And I, you know, my family is, came from England and Ireland, and they came over as poor immigrants as Mormons. They converted to Mormonism and that sailed across the Atlantic. The Mormon history is pretty complex. You know, it's a tale of, you know, an American religion that was hated, basically, and then driven from different state to state, and some pretty barbaric acts included in that as well, but not narrowly the kind of history as, you know, Black people have in America, but still it was also one of tragedy. But the Mormon people have always taken those tales, and that's their greatest strength in some ways. You know, they really hold on to the fact that we walked across the United States to go to Utah. And it resulted in a set of self-reliant values for our communities in the Mormon communities, where, you know, they talked about those things and derived very powerful values and lessons for the young from those stories. And I imagine that, you know, you guys also have some of that in your communities, and Maren, you definitely do. And I think that that's a source, a wellspring of strength and values in some respects, despite the tragedy also that accompanies it, right?
But Landon, let me ask you a question. How do we get to a place of respect? So, and I guess I'm going to challenge the group with this, because as I hear you all talk, it reminds me of a family, right? And you have the kids in the family. Some kids like mom and dad, some kids hate mom and dad, but no one can ever really agree on what's the history of the family. And in my experience of my own sort of healing work, like, you have to get to a place of just saying, you know what, maybe this, I don't know everything about the set of facts, and maybe that wasn't my experience, but a place of acknowledgement and respect. And especially you and Susan, who've done Braver Angels, where you try to heal divides. How do, as a country, as a nation, do we get there?
Well, that's my second question, actually.
That's the second question. That's true.
And sorry. I want to know the same thing, because
one of the things that makes me uncomfortable when we do talk about, you know, history, especially when it comes to, you know, slavery and different things like that, is I feel that there can be a level of defensiveness from white people that comes into the, well, my family didn't own slaves. And I think this might even touch a little bit on one of my questions, which is, you know, yes, that might absolutely be true, but, you know, for slavery to exist, you didn't have to own slaves to tolerate it. For Jim Crow to exist, you didn't have to personally be hanging whites only signs or, you know, anything like that. Like, there is a certain level of, like, we as a society, this was a norm, you know, that we
elected. It was law. It was more than a norm. It was law.
Yes, it was law, which means it was like passed, discussed, you know, everything of that sort. And so, I think a lot of times what makes me uncomfortable is when there is this, well, you know, like, don't blame me, don't blame my family. We didn't own slaves. Like, we came over as, you know, poor farmers, or it was only rich white people that owned slaves or things, or as if that suddenly made, you know, the fault of it only lie on like 100 people. You know, this was an institution that went on for hundreds of years, up and down, like, not only, you know, our nation, but, you know, throughout the globe. And there was an acceptance of this that just, quite frankly, allowed an injustice to go on. And I think there just has to be a reckoning with that. I mean, my mom used to say all the time, if everyone who claims they marched with Dr. King actually marched with Dr. King, there would have been no reason to march, right? like it would have been all right. But no one, you know, no one wants to say, you know, yeah, I really wasn't feeling that.
Yeah, I think there's a good segue there, actually, to kind of what we're getting to. So, Susan, you haven't got a chance to answer Landon's question, but I think, can I give you both of the questions at the same time? Because it's like, you having grown up in the South with the Klan active, right? Probably have an interesting connection to kind of history and present. And how do you deal with those tensions? And how do you, you know, how do you answer kind of the, you know, Marin's question as well around where does responsibility lie for the history that we have? You know, I mean, I clearly have a just full disclosure, you know, I think I said my grandparents were in the Holocaust, right? And Marin, you mentioned, you know, how long it took for us to intervene. And there's countless stories. You know, one of the stories in history that makes me, of recent history, that makes me the most emotional is Rwanda, you know, for the very reason that we didn't go in there. And it was, you know, I'm an American, you know, I watched a documentary. I'll say this one last thing and then turn it over to you, Susan. I've had reason to cry in my life, but the time that I broke down the most in my life was watching this documentary called Ghosts of Rwanda. And there was someone who escaped from Rwanda, who was a Tutsi, and made it over talking to the administration. I don't know if he was talking to Clinton. She was talking to Clinton's chief of staff. And the answer was, you know, about intervening and what was going on. And the answer was, America doesn't have friends. America has interests. Mm-hmm. And the thought that we just have interests, that we don't have a motivation to preserve humanity, you know, lives, was just, you know, hit me to the core, especially being the grandson of Holocaust survivors, right? So I very much resonate with some of kind of what you're saying, Marin. I don't know, Susan, how do you feel about all of it? What does it spark in you?
It sounds like that was an epiphanal moment for you. I call those the epiphanies in my life, where something just strikes to the core and just changes me fundamentally in a moment.
Yeah.
Well, just talking about history and epiphanal things and that I learned about history, it was mostly, kind of to answer Landon's question, it was mostly the sanitized version that he was talking about. You know, this happened and these were the great people, and here's how we should feel about them, and rah, rah, US, you know, look how far we've come. There were, you know, we learned about the civil rights and everything, but I think it was largely sanitized. And I resonate with what Marin said about, you know, big gaps in learning about things like that. I didn't know about Tulsa until a few years ago. How is that? Oh my gosh, is that, you know, that's my fault for not knowing that. There's just too much glossed over. And you talk about Rwanda, interesting, because I was in Rwanda. I desperately wanted to go to Africa in 1989. I went to Rwanda, and it's pre-genocide. And then went again with my husband. After we got married, we went there on our honeymoon in 2006. So to see pre-genocide and post-genocide Rwanda was a fascinating thing. And it hurt me to my core, because, you know, watching the genocide happened, knowing that people I had met there and helped me greatly while I was there, chances are they might have been slaughtered. I don't know.
And how did you feel knowing that the white Belge divided these people into the Hutu and the Tutsi? And, you know, through their normative practices, kind of use some of Marin's parlance, that's what led up to that genocide.
It absolutely did. Yeah, and I read Paul Rusesabagina's memoir and just tried to learn more about it, having visited there and wanting to know more about why that happened. And it was foisted upon them. It was an artificial construct of who these people and these people are divided. And then the words that people were hearing about the other. And so when people say words aren't violence, but, you know, it's a cycle of words lead to violence and violence leads to words, and they feed each other. And it was words in Rwanda that made that happen. It was radio blaring constantly that this other group, they're cockroaches, they're below humanity. Very, very eye-opening. Sorry, I think I'm deviating from your question. I have so many thoughts in my head. It's hard to.
You learn the sanitized version.
Yes.
You also and you saw in your upbringing, you got to see some of the relics of.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. And in fact, the Civil War was sometimes called the War of Northern Aggression. You know, stuff like that, just crazy stuff. So yeah, it was glossed over. But then I just remember having like epiphanal moments like learning about the Holocaust. I remember, you know, being in high school and seeing a film about the Holocaust and like a moment that just changed my life of seeing that. But then I didn't hear enough about.
In learning these things, did you ever view your race differently? Ooh. White people as a group?
Yeah. Yeah.
What shifted for you?
Just feeling ashamed about these times, this could happen, you know, amongst human beings. I mean, aren't we all just human? I just mean, just feeling just ashamed of that things like this can happen in the human race, and about Rwanda, and just feeling ashamed about that. And in fact, the second time I went to Rwanda, Bill Clinton was there at the same time. He was staying in the same hotel, and the people there told us it was because he felt such guilt about not doing enough. That he was doing as much as he could.
Yeah, but anyway. You know, he has a lot of remorse. Yeah, he puts a lot of energy toward Rwanda now because of it, actually. Where do you think, to get to Marin's question, where do you think responsibility lies?
So we
talked about history being complex.
Yeah.
There are these things to draw strength from, which has come up, you know, but there's obviously atrocities, you know, horrible things. I forget what words, Marcus, you used, that it aren't getting taught in their fullest way, right?
I
don't know. Where do you think responsibility lies, and how do we handle that in today's world? And then if you just want to pivot to your actual question, because I think a lot of it could relate to kind of how we approach changing society. And if you want to give the backstory to that as well.
Well, yeah, but about Marin's question about how do we deal with it now and deal with the past. I certainly think we should be teaching all of this in schools. And I hate that there's, like in Florida, what they're doing of trying to erase stuff from history books is just, what in the world? I mean, you've got to have open conversations about this and learn about these things in order to, you know, we have to look back to know where to go in the future. I just don't understand the wanting to sanitize all that and get rid of books and phrases and CRT and people trying to lump all these things and call it CRT to try to demonize the whole package is craziness. I don't understand that. It's awful. It's censorship that, boy, kids, you know, are not going to benefit from that. It's going to hurt them, I think. I don't know if that hits on what Marin said much at all, but we need to learn.
Thank you for watching this episode of Healing Race, and stay with us for a scene from our next video.
If you want to see more conversations like the one you just watched, please subscribe to our channel, share this video with friends and family, and like and comment on the video below.
If you'd like to be a guest on one of our episodes and have an open, real conversation about race, email us at guests@healingraceshow.com.
And if there are topics you think we should cover, we'd love to hear them. So please email your ideas to topics@healingraceshow.com.
As always, thanks for your support. We look forward to continuing the conversation with you. Now, here's a scene from our next Healing Race.
Marcus, what are your thoughts on protest and community and, I mean, exercising, you know, that right vis-a-vis the vitriol that's coming toward law enforcement?
I mean, I get it. I understand the anger and the frustration that people have, particularly Black people. I understand what emotion that invokes when there is police misconduct. I mean, I have the same exact emotion. I think for me being in law enforcement and seeing both sides of it, Marin articulated, or she said, she doesn't agree with the message of defunding the police. She thinks that it's a bad slogan. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But at the same time, when there is police misconduct, take it out of their pension or redirect the funds to schooling or to other programs. For me, I guess the disconnect is, and that's all fine and good if you feel that way, but at the same time, we're not focused on why the funding has to be so high in certain areas. Why do we have to give these funds to the police? Why is there a need to have more police in one area versus another? Or why is there a need to direct more funds to the police on the south side than on the north? So, and at the same time, when there is police misconduct and you take it out of their pension, what is that going to solve? What are you telling or doing to the cops who actually give a damn or that go to work every day and do the right thing?